Hello and welcome to What Mortgage TV and the Mortgage Nights 1-to-1. I'm Ben Wilkie, the editor of What Mortgage, and I'm here with Mike Cook, who's head of personal lending at Post Office Mortgages. Today we're going to be talking about buy-to-let. Buy-to-let has been a popular investment option for over a decade. Why is it such an attractive choice?
I think there's a few reasons it's an attractive choice. One of them is something that you can invest in a property. It will give you a rental return on a monthly basis over several years. At a time when often pensions were not growing that quickly, you can have a house that either gains in value, something that appreciates, or it's something that continues to give you that income. And when you retire, if you've been paying off the mortgage as you go along, you're left with a house that you can sell to get a lump sum, or you can continue to get a very good income as it goes along. There's also many factors driving the buy-to-let market into the future. So, for example, there's a lot of would-be first-time buyers are renting for longer. There's inward immigration. There's also a general shortage of housing. Tenants are rising. The registrations of new tenants looking for property is going up and up as well. And all that is pointing to a sort of strong future for buy-to-let. And as well, you know, we are a nation of want-to-be homeowners and a bricks-and-mortar nation. So I think there's a lot of positive drivers for buy-to-let.
And what about the downside?
There are, unfortunately, as with anything, a few downsides. The obvious one is when you don't have a tenant in. No tenant equals no rent. And if you're unlucky and have a few months of no rent, or voids as they're known, then that can quickly eat into your savings or your spare cash. Another obvious problem is maintenance and the costs involved. If you're particularly unlucky and you had a property that needed a new roof or a new boiler or an expensive repair such as that, of course that can become costly and eat into the profit at the end of a year. But also you can have problematic tenants. Now, if you have a tenant that refuses to pay the rent or doesn't pay enough rent or is problematic to neighbours and you need to remove that tenant, of course that can add a lot of stress and strains to it. And one of the final downsides is obviously property prices. They're never guaranteed. And 3 or 4 years ago, it did become quite easy to become a landlord. You need a deposit from as little as sort of 10 or 11%. Your monthly rent only really needed to cover the mortgage payment, and the lender was happy with that. So what happened is people were expecting to make, this is not all landlords, but some landlords expect to make a quick buck, to buy the property, to see it appreciate quite quickly over 2 or 3 years, sell the property and take away the sort of appreciation in that house. Now, many of those landlords, of course, will now be in what they call negative equity, so they still owe more in a mortgage than what the property is actually worth. So they're left tied into that asset or the mortgage a lot longer. So that can also be a downside as well. So it's really a case of looking for the long term, and that short term gain is not always guaranteed.
When potential investors are looking for a property, what are the key factors they need to consider?
There's quite a few key factors, and I think the main one is rentability. So when you look at the area and the property, how attractive is it in that area? Is there too much surplus rental property in that area? Is there just the right amount? And to look at the sort of local things as well, like the transport links, look at the things that you find attractive in a house if you're buying for yourself. Potential tenants look at the same things in a house that they want to rent. Because if it's not a particular high demand area, you could end up having periods of struggling to let out the property, or the rent could actually be a little bit lower than what you need to cover your monthly mortgage payments comfortably. I think another key point is to look at the type of tenant you want to attract into the property. Put yourself in their shoes and look at and sort of think, who is that ideal tenant? Are they a family? Are they a single professional? Are they something like a group of students? Each have different needs in a property, and you're just going to make sure you fit to your right target market. Another thing to look at is rent in that area, and to speak to local letting agents, those guys that know that area quite well. You may be familiar if you're buying a property near where you live or you have a lot of experience in, but it's always best just to go and speak to as many people as you can. And that leads on to another point, which is, are you going to do the management of the property yourself, to find tenants, to do the maintenance, to do the switchovers, to show people around? Well, that can be quite time consuming, and if that's not in an area that where you live, that can actually be quite a bind. So you need to think about that as well. And I think the final thing to look at when looking at a property is the sort of tax implications and all the costs involved. Just be very clear, you may want to seek advice from a tax planner or an accountant or even an IFA, or there's a whole host of information online as well to find out about that.
Mortgages for buy-to-let work differently to normal residential deals. Can you explain how they operate?
There are some similarities with residential mortgages. So, for example, the larger the deposit, the cheaper the rate. And also the rates can be fixed rates, which stay the same over a period of time, or they can track the Bank of England base rate. That's kind of where some of the similarities end. Then you get to things like, with a residential mortgage, you'll be assessed on your income as to how much you can borrow. Now with a buy-to-let mortgage, when a survey is done when you're buying the property, the surveyor will assess what the rental income is going to be on that property based on similar in the same area. So for example, a lender would tend to look for 125% of the monthly mortgage payment. So if the monthly mortgage payment is £1,000, they'll tend to look for at least £1,250 rental income to cover the monthly mortgage payment, plus a little bit more to run the property and to cover any sort of outgoings. The other difference is something called portfolios, where a landlord would want more than one property. They'll grow and have a number of buy-to-let properties, and that's something that's slightly different to residential because you only tend to have one house you live in. With a buy-to-let portfolio, you may need more than one mortgage with either different lenders or with the same lender. So they do tend to look at your overall buy-to-let portfolio as well, which can make it a little bit more complicated. But that's why the human being sort of underwriters tend to get more involved with buy-to-let than with residential.
So in this case, how can investors work out how much they can borrow?
There are many buy-to-let calculators online. For example, at Post Office website, you select the buy-to-let product you're interested in and you put in the estimated monthly amount. It will simply tell you the maximum loan you can borrow. And there are other websites available as well. If you do a search, you'll find other buy-to-let calculators that can work from actually the amount you want to borrow, and it will then tell you the rent that you need to be looking at in order to support that mortgage as well. So there's actually plenty of ways that the landlord can find that out.
What deals are available?
There are actually quite a lot of buy-to-let deals around at the moment, and they tend to work similar to residential in that the larger the deposit you can put down up front is the lower the rate you can get. So for example, there are some deals starting at from about 20% deposit, but they're few and far between. They tend to have larger fees up front. So for example, 2.5% to 3.5%. Most tend to start from the 25% deposit area or 30%. And the more, the more you can put down, the cheaper the rate. Just a slight thing to be wary of is that some of the cheaper deals, those that are under 4%, do tend to have that 3.5% fee up front, which is quite an outlay. Expect to pay mid 4% to late 4%, depending on the size of the deposit you can put down. From a Post Office perspective, we've got quite a broad range of buy-to-let, which we're quite happy with. From a lender's perspective, we've got tracker rates, we've got 2, 3, and 5 year fixed rates to give that choice. Some have no upfront legal fees or have a valuation fee included as well to cater for the sort of the first-time landlord or indeed the remortgage switching their buy-to-let deal to the Post Office. And our rates start from around 4.5%.
Many experts say that building a portfolio not only increases your wealth, but also reduces some of the risks associated with buy-to-let. Can you explain how this works?
I think growing a portfolio can be a route to wealth, and it's a route to growing a sort of sustainable business, which is actually a good similarity. If you were growing a small business, if you grow too quick and don't have adequate controls in place or sort of rainy day money, you can soon come into difficulties. And I think it's similar to the buy-to-let portfolio. You grow it and add properties as you can afford to in the right time and when it's going to actually enhance your overall investment. So if you do it correctly over a long period of time, choosing the right areas, and I would say having quite a diverse portfolio as well. That may be in different locations, it may be different types of property, different types of tenant that you're aiming for, can give you a very sustainable business. So for example, if you get a surplus in rent, so the gap between your mortgage payment and your rent is quite healthy in some of your properties, That can help tide you over if one of your properties is empty at the moment, for example. So that is where it can help. And also, if you want to expand your portfolio and some of them have gone up in value, you can actually remortgage some of those properties, release some of that equity to generate funds, which is your deposit, for yet another property. And that's how many people do it. It's over a steady period of time and done in a very controlled way.
How can investors use the mortgage market to build their portfolios?
Investors can use the mortgage market in quite a few ways. One of them, as I've alluded to, is when their portfolio grows, they may wish to remortgage some of those properties, maybe one, maybe several at once, to try and release those funds to buy another property. And for example, at the post office, we allow a maximum number of 5 properties with us. Some people choose to move 5 at once, some people choose individual properties. So that one that's got the most money sitting in it or equity sitting in it, maybe the one they choose to refinance, to remortgage in order to buy another one to add to their portfolio. And various lenders have different rules around this. And I think, but the other thing that's important to bear in mind as well is mortgages mean you don't have to put all your savings or all your eggs into one basket. So for some people, to buy a property for cash may be quite an outlay, whereas a mortgage can make it slightly more tax efficient in that you can pay the lender back and it's not direct profit to you, but also it leaves you with your money for other investments as well.
Mike, thanks very much indeed for taking the time to speak to us today. And thank you too for watching. Don't forget to check back on What Mortgage TV for future updates.